was. Cynics! Pseudonyms! Hysteria!
Madam!
Where is my husband? On the best of intuition, I believe that he is fouling the nest. And it seems he has brought in the legions to help. Who are all these people?
Madam, at this very moment, the hospitality of your house is being enjoyed by a great captain, Miles Gloriosus.
The Gloriosus?
The himself. He requested a few moments' rest in your charming residence. As the daughter of a Roman general, I hoped you would not object.
Object? Pseudolus, you have acted well.
Go on.
I was greeted as captain once. Captain Gloriosus, I am shattered that I was not here to greet you personally.
You are of this house?
For many, many years. My father, you know, Captain, was General Magnus. On the last anniversary of his death, I entertained over 200 officers.
200? By yourself?
Not entirely. Hysterium here was a great help.
Welcome to Putting It Together, the show that goes through the entire body of work of Stephen Sondheim, show by show, and song by song. I'm self-described Sondheim expert Kyle Marshall, and today we have a really good show for you, talking about the song That Dirty Old Man, which, after last night, I kind of feel like, and I'm not going to elaborate. What I am loving about this show is how songs that I have a preconceived notion on, or an established opinion about, are subtly changing in some ways. I don't want to, I guess, spoil the surprise necessarily. I'm not a huge fan of how this song is sung. However, my opinion of Domina and how she relates to the plot and how this song actually works really well within the show, it's changed. I think that after having spoken with Zena here today, Zena Lee, who is my guest and a great guest, kind of opened my eyes to exactly what this song is doing and how it actually excels at doing it. So I can't wait for you to listen in on that conversation. About that conversation, I want to alert you to something, and this is completely my fault. Since I moved to my new co-work space, there's a new room set up for where I do my podcasting from, and I overlooked some of the mic settings and how I treated the room, so you are going to hear some background noise every so often in this episode. I think it's the worst, quote-unquote, about halfway through, but it's there. You'll notice it probably, and I just wanted to call out and not make it look like I am trying to hide the fact that that is what is going on. Nothing that's going to actually ruin the conversation, but you'll hear it occasionally. But Zena is great. Before we get too far, let me tell you that Putting It Together is a proud member of the Alberta Podcast Network, powered by ATB. They promote and support Alberta-made podcasts and connect their audiences with Alberta-based businesses and organizations. And if you have a few moments, there is currently a listener survey happening for the network. I've left a link in the description if you are able to participate. The Alberta Podcast Network is also a sponsor this week, so I'd like to highlight a specific show for you. I think that Domina deserves better than what she gets in this show. Too bad she didn't have a show like Girl Tries Life to listen to in ancient Rome. This is a podcast where Victoria Smith interviews inspiring women to show there are many different ways to live an incredible life. Hear tangible ways to achieve your goals and dreams. You can find it and all the great shows by going to albertapodcastnetwork.com. ATB is also a sponsor this week, and it's a great time to mention the Branch for Arts and Culture. They recently invited me to interview the poet laureate of a city a few hours north of where I live, called St. Albert. It was super fun, and has already been released on another show I do called Creative Block, but it was hosted at the Branch for Arts and Culture. The ATB Branch for Arts and Culture, also known as The Branch, is a clubhouse, arts venue, and financial institution for creative and cultural workers in Alberta. It's a place designed for creators by creators. It's a place that understands the challenges artists face because those that work at The Branch are artists themselves. Members have access to industry-specific banking services and career development resources designed to help them do their very best work. It's located in the iconic CKUA building in downtown Edmonton and in the Stephen Avenue ATB branch in Calgary. These spaces defy the expectations of what a financial institution should feel like. Instead, these locations offer a comfortable, unintimidating, and creative financial experience. Go to atb.com/thebranch for more information. All right, and now it's time for Plodding Along.
Thank you.
This is where I describe what's currently happening in the plot. So after Act 1 ended, with the arrival of Miele's Gloriosus, he feels like there's something not quite right. Pseudolus, who is pretending to be Lycus, tells Miles that his bride, Philia, has disappeared, and they'll go and look for her. Miles sends some of his men along, but Pseudolus loses them in the busy streets. To complicate matters, Domina, Senex's wife, returns, convinced that her husband is up to no good. You heard a clip from the movie at the beginning of this episode where Miles thinks that Domina is a courtesan herself. This is when That Dirty Old Man is sung. Thank you to all our sponsors. Take a look at the show notes for information about the music we're referencing and how to get your own book of Sondheim lyrics. Let's now listen to a section from the original Broadway cast recording of That Dirty Old Man. On the other side is my conversation with actor Zena Lee.
The moment I am gone, I wonder where he'll go. In all your simple honesty, you can't begin to.
Thank you so much for joining me here today.
Hi, Kyle. I'm so happy to be here. I'm so excited.
Yeah, we get to talk about Sondheim here today. I think we're going to start the way we do every single time, which is maybe you can introduce yourself and tell it is what it is that you do.
Well, I'm Zena, and I guess my background is acting. I did theater school for a long time, film and TV and musical theater. So I did acting for stage and screen program at Capilano University in Vancouver, and then went on to do the musical theater program at Grant McEwen in Edmonton. I guess right now I'm a mom. Like, I have two twin 19-month-old now they are.
Wow.
So 19-month-old girls. So that they keep me busy. So, and then I have another full-time job. So
sure.
I'm so all over the place. A lot of low-key acting stuff. So that's not my main focus anymore because it's busy. Mm-hmm. Being a mom is busy. So yeah.
I want to talk specifically about the musical theater program that you went to.
Mm-hmm.
What is it that you actually learn in musical theater school? Is it more just like interpreting songs, or like what is it that you focus on?
Sometimes if I look back, like there were days where like, wow, I went to school and we rolled around on the floor. Like, I know it sounds ridiculous. So we do have what's called like movement class,
yeah,
where we do a lot of crazy movement stuff. And those days, actually, that was one of my favorite classes. So because I'm like, wow, I just went to school and rolled around the floor for a while and made like funny noises. And it was awesome. But not to simplify it that way, the musical theater school I went to, which was Grant McEwen, I graduated in 2010, a long time ago, just really focused on, like the acting and actually just practice. It was a lot of actual doing it, mm-hmm. not a lot of theorizing. There's maybe a theater history class here and there, but a lot of dance classes, vocal stuff, and basically the triple threat deal that you would expect from a musical theater school.
What do you think your biggest takeaway was? Like, what is different about acting in musical theater versus, say, quote unquote, straight plays?
See, the trap that many actors fall into is like that over the top, like you got to be super big when you're doing musical theater. And when you're watching that, actually, you can kind of tell when it's not rooted in anything real. It still has to be real. Like, it has to be really rooted in real emotion. And, oh my gosh, I'm going to butcher something that my teacher once told me. And it's just the world of musical theater is that they're just so full of emotion that they have to sing about it. And that's really the impetus of why somebody's singing on stage. And that's the point. And then you buy in.
Yeah.
So, it's just that world that is just full of emotions that you have to sing about it. So
I wonder how you feel. I mean, I never really like saying like, this is the rule and you always have to follow the rule. I think sometimes rules need to be broken specifically. But Stephen Sondheim himself has said that he thinks that when actors break out in a song, it works best if it is an emotion that they're singing about, rather than I'm talking about a thing that's happening like plot-wise in the show. I don't know if you agree with that necessarily.
I guess what was your actual question about that?
I guess my actual question is, do you agree that the best of musical theater is when the actors are singing about emotions rather than I'm singing about plot and advancing the plot for it?
Yeah, that's like even in any medium, really. Like, that's what's interesting. That's why we watch these stories and why we watch their lives on stage happen. So I do agree with you for sure. Because, you know, plot points can be just delivered in a different way. Mm-hmm. Like, just by, you know, a simple dialogue. We don't have to do a full exposition of what's happening. That could be simple. But what the character is going through is really what's effective, I think.
So for you, what do you think the primary difference is acting in a musical versus acting in film and television?
I think... not to be cliche, I guess like film and TV acting, I do find it's just really honing it down and just really just laser focus. Whereas you got to really be selfish about what you're feeling.
Sure.
Like yourself, it's you, like you're just yourself. Whereas in musical theater, the point is to share. So if you were to really, I've seen people do it where a lot of actors do go back and forth. It's not in the case anymore. Like, if you want to be a working actor in Canada, you do have to do everything. You have to know how to do everything. And I do see people kind of go back and forth between the medium and somebody who's like, you know, I did a lot of musical theater. I did a lot of theater in general. Start going into film and then go back to theater.
Mm-hmm.
And starting to really infuse their performances with the film and TV training. And sometimes it doesn't work. Like, I do, I have find that you're like, you know, this is, like, you have, because a lot of people are like, oh, I don't want to be over the top. I don't want to be fake.
Yeah.
But if you internalize everything, it really doesn't read on stage and it just becomes lifeless. So it is it's a different skill. And yeah, I guess the difference between selfish about it and sharing.
Yeah.
You know? Okay.
So tell me about Stephen Sondheim. I mean, you're in this musical theater school.
Mm-hmm.
Like, when were you first introduced to Stephen Sondheim?
You know, I tried to think about this question. Honestly, West Side Story is probably the first musical I saw on stage. And I was probably in grade 2, like really young. And it was back in the Philippines when I used to live there.
Mm-hmm.
So that I don't even, couldn't tell you. I know the theater that I was at, but I couldn't tell you anybody who was in it.
No, okay.
But yeah, that was like, which is kind of a really mature show.
I was gonna say, that's an interesting show to watch
as a really, really young person. No, grade 2, not 2-year-old.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, 7, I guess. But yeah, because, you know, there was like, oh, they're having sex on stage. And it was like, oh, I have to like look away and pretend I don't know what's happening. You know,
yeah, right.
I remember, I still fully remember that feeling. But I was just enamored by what was happening on stage. It was, yeah. So that was kind of my first, whether I knew Stephen Sondheim was watching or not. But really the kind of diving deep into Sondheim probably happened in theater school.
Mm-hmm.
Just because we had to. Like, that was kind of the main stuff that we had to really learn. His songs were the best ones to really do because there was just so much to dive into.
Yeah, he definitely is an actor's composer,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
like, he really
great.
Wants to. He mentions it even in his book here, Finishing the Head, how he likes to inhabit the character when he's writing. So it's like he's like literally acting it out as he's writing his dialogue.
That's cool.
It has to make it feel real for himself. I'm so then who what were the songs? What were the shows that like stood out for you when you got into him?
I think to this day my favorite is still Sunday in the Park with George. Mm. It's interesting because I've never seen it on stage.
Yeah.
But I love the music. Like, I will sit there and cry like just while listening to it. Oh, it's so good. And you know, I've told you I'm obsessed with the new Jake Gyllenhaal one.
Oh, yeah.
I love it so much. I mean, I love Mandy Patinkin and Bernadette Peters doing it, but this new one it's still great. Mm. Like, it's the music, I think.
Yeah, the music is just, it is really, really good. I mean, I think I've said it even on the show before how if I need a pick-me-up or I need someone to, like, I don't know, like, reinforce me, mm-hmm. and like jazz me up a bit, it's Move On from that show. I love that song
so
much.
And we did like one of our end pieces in like our second year of Grant McEwen. We did it as a whole, the whole class doing Sunday. Yeah, it was just really cool to really break it down and just like sometimes you're just singing your line, which is the soprano 2 line, which what I was. And it was just so powerful. It was just so powerful. Like having everybody's voices around you like blaring and all the notes forming together. Oh, it's good.
The only sort of thing that I would have that is I think similar to that. I was in band for whatever that would have been, 6 years. So from grade 6 to grade 11. And I played clarinet. That was what I, the instrument that I chose to have. And there was occasions where you'd be like second or third clarinet. So if that was the case, it was like, you might have like five notes.
Yeah, exactly.
every few measures that you had to actually play until you got put into like the first clarinet position.
Yeah.
But there were certain songs, it's like, even if you were like second or third clarinet, it's like, no, this is like my moment. This is cool. This is like the great moment where everyone comes in and you feel like you're part of this like bigger
role. Yeah, as soon as that harmony is just right and everybody's doing the right harmony, I guess, then it's like magic. It's great. Yeah. Awesome.
So then specifically about a funny thing happened on the way to the forum. It's funny because I'm leading this question as if I don't know the answer to it. We just had a conversation about it. But what is your relationship with this show?
Very little, to be very honest. Mm-hmm. I just really wanted to be in your podcast. And sure. I was like, Kyle, ask me. And I don't care what song I do. I'll do it. And yeah, Forum was the one that happened. And I did know songs about it, like obviously Comedy Tonight. I told you about the... I did a medley in school.
Right.
And I did a Sondheim medley, and one of the, Comedy Tonight was one of them. And yeah, so I mean, I didn't know too much about the show, but I definitely know songs from it just from like looking through books of scores trying to find audition songs. And I did find like, you know what? Oh, I did know all of these songs because I looked at them to put in my audition book, and they're very, very good for auditions, I think.
Oh, yeah, there's really, lots of good audition there's, songs.
Because it's, you don't want to go too much. It's a good kind of, it can showcase you, I guess. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Especially if you are doing like acting along with it, right? I mean, even going back to the song, I'm Calm or something like that, where you're like physically have to act super nervous.
And those are the interesting
things
to watch. Like even if somebody had to audition for me and I'm kind of the one adjudicating, is that a word?
Yep.
Somebody seeing that, even if I don't know the plot line of Forum or where that song is from, it's still, you can still see that performance, like appreciate that performance on its own. So.
Yeah, yeah. So after having now, I think you've watch the movie and listen to some of the stuff. I don't know. What stands out to you for the show as a whole?
What stands out? Well, I mean, the weirdness of the setting.
Sure.
I guess, like, the movie was the really strange one, and I know you're not a fan.
I'm not a fan, but...
but I know you reiterate in the podcast, but that kind of stood out. But then you really... I was kind of like, oh, no. But then I was like, okay, not bad. Like, I get it. Yeah, it's just that jarring moment of the setting where they're at, like the slavery bit, like doing a lot of, I don't know if I can mention Game of Thrones here.
Sure, we can.
Yeah, but just like, you know, a lot of the Game of Thrones liberating, spoiler alert, oh no. but yeah, just like this, the slave portion of the story, I was like, oh, okay, that's kind of where, I mean, they took it from actual Roman days, and then that's kind of where George R. R. Martin's taking that from, which I'm like, oh, okay, it's all tying together. What also really did stand out is just wrestling with how to take the content, I guess. Like I was telling you, like face value is really like, you can take it of just like, oh, it's not great.
Yeah. So
like, well, these are topics that aren't really okay anymore, but then you do really have to dive deep and say why.
You
know what I mean? And that's kind of the interesting part of it, really.
Yeah, it is just a fascinating show. I mean, this is something I've also asked here a few different times, but because we know Stephen Sondheim much more for his later work, where it is so character dependent and it's so, I don't know, taps into the human emotion, I think, so well. And I think there's elements of that in the show for sure.
Oh,
the more I delve into it, like,
especially
this
song, I think, yeah.
Yeah, we can really delve into it. It's like, oh, okay, I can see the Sondheim that actually comes out much more so later on.
Right.
I still think it's like the most bizarre choice for his like first real like music and lyrics.
Yeah, it's easy to say these characters are very two-dimensional. And actually a lot of them are written that way. Domina is one that I'm changing my mind on.
Mm.
I'm kind of thinking, hey, there's actually a lot more to her than meets the eye. I know she doesn't get too many moments in the show. But if you really like, I mean, I've been trying to really figure the song out, but my impression is there is a lot going on with her, you know?
Okay.
So, I mean, I don't want to what we're going to talk about.
I want to come back and actually talk about the subject matter here after we go through the songs.
Sure,
I think there's a good conversation to have with that. But yeah, let's get into the lyrics of That Dirty Old Man. That's what this song is. It opens up Act 2, which means like we've had our intermission. Hopefully you've had your restroom break and now you're coming back. And this is the first time we get to kind of like ease us back into the evening. There's not a whole lot of songs, I don't think, in the second act, or that certainly doesn't feel that way. So they wanted to give one to Domina, they give one to Philia, and then they did a lovely reprise, and then that's kind of the end of it. That being said, before we go too much further, I do want to honor the people who have actually portrayed Domina, at least in the editions that we're discussing here today. So from the original Broadway cast, it's Ruth Cobart. From the film, even though this song does not appear in the film, it was portrayed by Patricia Jessel. And in the 1996 revival, it's played by Mary Testa, who I only just found out. I was wondering like why her voice sounded so familiar, and it's because she originated the role of Madame Morrible in Wicked. So if you know that show and that original Broadway cast recording, then you'll know the voice.
Yeah.
So we have Domina speaking or singing, and she starts... For over 30 years, I've cried myself to sleep, assailed by doubts and fears, so great the gods themselves would weep. The moment I am gone, I wonder where he'll go. In all your simple honesty, you can't begin to know.
For over 30 years, I've cried myself to sleep, assailed by doubts and fears, so great the gods themselves would weep. The moment I am gone, I wonder where he'll go. In all your simple honesty, you can't begin to know.
And then the actual line that sometimes is written here is, oh, but this lasts for actually quite a while. And actually, yes. I find it like starts off a little bit in sad and then comes like really angry.
Yeah, afterwards. There's a lot. As an actor, there's really definitely a lot you can do with that O line. Mm-hmm. Just because it does go on for, I mean, I have the score here.
Yeah, yeah. How many bars does it go for?
Four bars.
Yeah.
And we're in, let me see, can't tell you, doesn't say. But anyways, four bars of like a lot of O's that kind of undulate, I would say.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's definitely, for performances on YouTube, there's definitely a lot of different ways you can go about it, because it's open. I mean, all these songs are open for interpretation to a point. You can really infuse that performance. So
yeah absolutely. Is there for me, like, when I jump into lyrics, I know that Sondheim himself hates the idea of people just looking at his lyrics, because it has to be combined with the music too in a way, but the biggest thing here is that there's years and fears that rhyme, and then go and no rhyme, but I don't feel like there's a lot of and sleep and weep. So he's basically going back and forth as far as how the rhyme scheme goes here.
Right.
That being said, one thing that continually amazes me is that he uses this in a way where it doesn't sound like people are rhyming. Like it feels like she's stating these things as she comes back on. But as far as an actor's approach to this, like, what would you do if you were cast as Domina? Like, she's obviously angry right here at this moment, but how would you portray this?
I mean, I had to always look at the song from only the lens of an actor, because that's who I am. I mean, one of the things I learned from school was just like, you have to be, there's a starting point in every song and you have to end in a different place. So there always has to be a journey, because then what's the point? Why did you even open your mouth, kind of thing? So, I mean, I think in this beginning part, it's just more of, she's really opening up and like really being vulnerable to, is she talking to hysteria?
Hysteria.
Yeah, hysteria. It's interesting because her arc, really, to this point is just this like grouchy, I mean, domineering, quote unquote, and just this nasty, I mean, in the movie, she's just this nasty old lady that's just, you know, just, not pleasant to be around with. But I don't know if, I guess this is the first time we really see her kind of be vulnerable and opening up. Which is really interesting for a character named Domina.
I mean, I don't think it's any mistake that she's named the way that she is. Like, everyone is kind of named after their kind of character trait a little bit.
Yeah, exactly.
Senex is Roman for, or Latin for old man. Mm-hmm. Hysterium is hysterical.
Right. Like, yeah, exactly.
That sort of thing.
But it's just interesting that I love that we get to see that, you know, like as she opens up to the audience Through hysteria. Is it hysteria?
Hysterium.
Yum. Okay, sorry.
Yeah. What you're hitting at here is that this is another part of the reason why the movie somewhat doesn't work for me is because you lose all of these character building moments a lot of the time. Because even how she opens this up, like, for over 30 years, I've cried myself to sleep. Like, that is, that's pretty tragic if, like, literally for 30 years, over 30 years.
Yeah, and it's almost like, I guess she's had to be this, like, strong, domineering woman that's kind of has a lot of walls up, you know? Because, yes, her husband is, you know, a philanderer.
Well, basically.
Yeah, you know, and just trying to keep a household together. Like, I think from my interpretation, I could be wrong. Like, she's the daughter of a Roman officer. I don't know what they
something
call
like that.
Yeah, where it's like her line. Well, she's a citizen of Roman, but her line is noble, like a nobility, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
So she's kind of like on the kind of higher end, and she's trying to uphold her house, but her husband is just, you know, not great. But turmoiled over these 30 years, really. So it's just, it's really neat to see how, yes, she's strong, but this is where she opens up and we see, okay, why did she have to be this person, you know?
Has she
become this person? It's because she's worried. She's insecure. She's, you know, been cheated on so many times. Like, she's become this person.
In a way, to reference like a fairly modern Broadway show, are you familiar with the show Fun Home?
No.
At all?
Oh.
You should check out Fun Home.
Fun Home.
Okay. It's the quick version of the plot. It actually follows this girl who both her and her father turn out to be gay, and they kind of try and reconcile that information. But there's a song near the end that the mother sings that I always find so incredibly heartbreaking, which is basically, don't live your life like I did.
Right.
Where I kind of wasted all these years behind me. Like, go off and, like, pursue happiness because I didn't. And now I'm suffering for it sort of thing.
Right, yeah.
And this is kind of that version here, whatever that would, this would be, like, 60 years ago when the show was put on in the first time.
Days and days and days made of lunches and car rides and shirts and socks and grades and piano, and no one clocks the day you disappear. Days and days and days, that's how it happens.
Yeah, I think that when she opens up here, at least lyrically, I feel something, because I think we all can somewhat empathize with the fact, she feels like she's kind of wasted time, or that she feels like she is put upon, and she has to put up like this strong face to overcompensate for it. But she really is, she does actually really like this person that she's married with.
Yeah, I guess at some point they were in love and they were happy together. Something turned, as one does, you know. There's, I guess, I would assume there was no option to not be in that relationship at that point in time.
I mean, I don't know how much free choice that women had back in the Roman days.
Yeah, which is interesting. It's another contrast, right? Like, women weren't really valued at that point in this time, the time frame that we're looking at here. But yet she is kind of this strong person too. So, you know, she's not really painted in great light in this whole show. But at the same time, this song really is great to see that different side.
Absolutely. So she continues on. I want him. I need him. Where is he? That dirty old man is here somewhere, cavorting with someone young and fair, disporting in every shameless whim. Just wait till I get my hands on him.
I want him. Here somewhere, cavorting with someone young and fair, disporting in every shameless whim. Just wait till I get my hands on him.
Now, again, we are just looking at the lyrics, but what is actually happening on stage at this point is that she's kind of manhandling Hysterium, who's standing beside her.
Right.
So the joke about this is, she's opening up, but at the same time, like, kind of assaulting this other character on stage.
Like, Hysterium kind of serves as the as Senex, kind of all the action is going towards him, and I guess that's where the comedy is and staging it. I mean, that's open for interpretation, but I think that's a point. Yeah, and I've seen just YouTubing.
Yeah.
Some are just weird ones. Like, I was like, I don't know about that choice of, like, I've seen some, like, Domina going, like, riding Mysterium like a horse. It's just weird. Strange things. And I'm like, where, what? So I don't know. I don't know how that would really play out. It depends on the actors you're working with, I think.
Yeah, and how far they want to take it, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. You were saying that you saw actually one where it was a drag queen that played Domina.
Yes, I was like, it was such a small clip. And I was like, that's so good. I think it's called Gulf Shore Theater House. Don't know where it is. Didn't really look into it. But I was like, yes, that actually works so well. And the comedy is there.
Yeah,
it makes sense that Domina is this like big drag queen. And it works so well because then the comedy of assaulting the other person in that scene is just 10 times funnier. I don't know why, but
there was a Broadway revival too of Les Mis that did the same thing with Madame Thénardier, or how
yeah,
you
Thénardier,
actually said,
yeah,
Thénardier,
yeah.
Who's also a drag queen in that performance.
Yeah, that works so well.
I guess the flip side of that is, do you need to have like, quote unquote, a domineering woman actually be portrayed by a man? But I don't know. It still works for me. Usually,
I think it works. Yeah. It's funny because, I mean, a lot of the amateur shows of this is, you know, college students or high school students. And because they're young, they play young.
Sure.
And then this gentleman, she was, you know, just an older person and probably has that, you know, it worked well, the age that she was worked for this character. And it's just funnier to see somebody like because I think the trap is if you're young and you play Domina and you're singing about, it's kind of this like brokenhearted thing, then it plays that way where it's like I'm sad. You know what I mean? It doesn't play the same, I guess. And that's where casting choices are essential. So
I think too, the thing that we might be glossing over here a little bit, talking about this song, is that, number one, this is a comedy, so it's supposed to be making people laugh, right? So I think what Sondheim is doing here really adeptly is physically what is happening on stage is what the comedy bit is, but what she's saying is super tragic.
Yeah,
so I think he's really
is.
Playing with that. So we're probably going to be laughing if we were seeing a performance of this.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, if we just take a look at the lyrics like we're doing right now, it's like, oh, well, she's opening up and talking about some real
stuff.
Yeah,
this is really sad. If you put this in a different show, it'd be a... You could.
Yeah.
And it would read, more true to the words and not in a, you know, juxtaposition of the comedy that's happening on stage. So, I really like it.
Yeah. So, Domina continues on. She says, I'll hold him and fold him. Where is he? That dirty old man, where can he be? Profaning our vows for all to see, complaining how he's misunderstood, abusing me if he only would.
Dirty old man, where can he be? Profaning our vows for all to see, complaining how he's misunderstood, abusing me if he only would.
So there's I think that's a little funny turn of phrase there, wanting to be abused, at least in a marital sort of way.
It's in parentheses, if only he only would. Oh, I did want to mention just the change vocally that the singer is doing at this point is, you know, these long, not really that musical.
Yeah.
I don't know how to use the right words, but, you know, in the beginning, it's just...
Yeah, like, I'll hold him.
It's
like
kind of those
thing,
legato notes. And then, you know, all the patter starts happening when she's angry. And that contrast is just so Sondheim. I love that.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it's just like the music dictates what you're supposed... This is why Sondheim is great to perform, is that the music dictates what you're feeling.
Oh, absolutely. Like, and she's longing for him in those like long sustained notes, and then it's like, now I'm mad again.
Yeah,
like,
I'm mad. And then she goes back to the I'll hold him and fold him, where is he? And it's just and then it switches again, that as soon as she goes into that dirty old man bit. And that's really cool too.
And it's, again, I don't know if I've actually said this on the podcast before, but something that usually is one of, it's not a pet peeve, but something that I know that I just don't like for whatever reason, is when when we get into like super soprano notes, it just whatever reason it hits my ears wrong, and it just like makes my hair stand up a little bit.
I can agree with you there.
Yeah, so it's unfortunate that this song is sung mostly soprano. There's moments where it's not, but or at least it's pretty high pitched in the original Broadway cast recording. I think it's a little bit better.
I'm looking at the score, and it's not that high. It's
interesting.
Like all middle notes, and it's all mixed. Like I would sing this in my mix, and. But I think it's the style of the show too. Like they do go up there for that style. I have yet to see one that's like somebody singing really, because mix is really that poppy sound, that modern. And I think that would be kind of more jarring to hear it that way. But it's not that high, which is kind of interesting. And if we look at the score, where the rest fall is really, like as an actor, like that's where all the neck, like the rest is where you find your next thought. It's really cool because where the rests are placed,
like what in what way are they placed, like how can you
describe it? Like the but just I want him rest, I need him rest, where is he, rest, and then that dirty old man, she goes off. Well, there's a musical notation here called Konfuoku, which I have to Google. I did Google it, but I forget, but it's with vigor, with
you know,
something like that. I'm sorry, music people out there listening.
There are so many angry letters being written right now.
Just be like, you don't know what Konfuoku means. That sounds bad, actually. It's just interesting that each line of that has like all these rests. Really, I mean, whether it's sung like that or not, I think in the revival she does sustain it quite a bit more. Maybe she doesn't need a lot of breath. She's that good, Mary Testa. And yeah, that's where you breathe and, you know, kind of decide when that next thought is. It really is kind of, if you, all everything you need is there. You just got to look, you know, which is awesome.
So she continues on saying, "Oh, love, sweet love, why hide? You vermin, you worm, you villain. Come face, embrace your bride. Wherever he is, I know he's still an angel."
Come face, embrace your bride. Wherever he is, I know he's still an angel. My
angel. That's so funny.
I know, so it's like going all over the place, right? Like calling him vermin, and then ends up saying, no, he's an angel. So she's having this completely different set of emotions kind of all happening at the same time.
Yep.
I like to call it the fact that, I mean, in the first act, there's the Bring Me My Bride song that happens with Miley's Gloriosus who shows up, who's pretty, like, uber male.
Yes, yeah.
Like the Gaston of the piece, almost.
Mm-hmm.
But here she says, there's a similar phrase that she's coming, like, embrace your bride. Like, I am your wife.
Remember when we got married? Right? Yeah, it's kind of like, hello, remember you did ask me.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I was your conquest, quote unquote. And
right.
Now, like,
and then I'm like, who am I now kind of thing? It's just, just really trying to invoke that.
Mm-hmm.
Invoke that, like, hey, we do remember when you liked me. I mean, they've been together for 30 years, which is a long time. And, you know, I've been in a long relationship where you go back and forth of like, oh, yeah, like, we've been together for so long, you're at a point where you're like, okay, I can't stand you, but at the same time, I do love you, you know what I mean? And it is true to, you know, real emotions. I think this is one of the songs where it's not just like, here I am, I'm like the love, I mean, the first lovely, I guess, is a little bit of that of like, you know, kind of just that.
The hopefulness, I guess.
Yeah. Where this just has quite a lot more, you know, behind it.
Yeah, it's like I've never had like a super long-term relationship, unfortunately, but my parents have been married for nearly 40 years or just over 40 years. And I still vividly remember, like, this was like a huge thing between my mother and father, so hopefully they don't mind me sharing this.
Yeah.
But it was like,
sorry, mom and dad.
Yeah, they've been married for 25 years, and what my mother had done when we were growing up to make the food budget last a little bit longer is like, if she made anything with like hamburger meat in it, she would actually put oatmeal into it because it actually combines and like makes it go longer, have more of it. And my dad finally told us, like, I really hate that you put oatmeal in hamburger. And she was like, we've been married for 25 years and this is the first time you actually told me this. Yeah. So I think it just goes to show, like, communication is key.
Yes.
Don't hold on to these things that fester.
Right.
So it's hard to say, like, if she and Senex actually had a real conversation, whether they could resolve any other differences or if it's just that would never, ever happen.
Yeah, I would hope so. Like, my nature is to think that they were in love at one point, you know, and they did get together of their own accord. And then just over time, you know, it's kind of just degraded.
Right.
But, like, it does feel like in the song, she longs for that old, you know, the nice time they did have as a husband and wife.
I'm going to try not to trip over my tongue here, because the last stanza goes, "My angel, where is he? That dirty old man divine. I love him. I love him. That lecherous, lewd, lascivious, loathsome, lying, lazy, dirty old man of mine."
There we go.
So he likes to do that alliteration with the L's there at the very, very end.
Where is he? That dirty old man divine. I love him. I love him. That lecherous, lewd, lascivious, loathsome, lying, lazy, dirty old man of mine.
Which I'm sure that is a mouthful for an actor probably to nail.
Yeah, lots of practice. You gotta really nail those and not mess that up. But it's just, that's when it just becomes really funny, I think.
Yeah.
yeah, and it's the stanzas before, you kind of see, she goes like love, sweet love, and then, you know, and then goes to the dirty old man bit. And it's just kind of divided. And here it's kind of mixed in together.
Sure.
Really just looking at these lyrics. It's like, my angel, where is he? That dirty old man divine, question mark. It just becomes like the good, bad. I love him. I hate him. Part starts to really mix together and kind of just meld into one. Yeah, just, yeah.
Dirty old man divine is such an interesting lyric choice, I find. Like, it flows really nicely out of the mouth, but it's. Yeah, it's combining like two very, like, it's a weird juxtaposition, I find.
Yeah, totally.
So what are your thoughts, I guess, overall on the song, that you've had time to like really dig into it?
Well, I kind of mentioned earlier, it's just that I like that we get this moment with Domina, because we haven't. She's kind of been painted that this like mean old woman, really, that's just,
right,
you know, not fun to be around, not pleasant, and like, who would want to be married to her? You know, and we see it from Senex's lens, you know, and so it's just like, oh yeah, that character, whatever.
Right.
Yeah, she's just so, why did she come back? Like, you know, as a person watching it, she's just gonna mess up the whole thing. But in this, I like that we get to stop and really see this, just because it just, as kind of two-dimensional most of these characters are, yes, it's a farce, yes, it's like one of the earlier Sondheims, you can really still see the depth of where Sondheim's coming from, all that character building stuff that he does really, really get into, because you could just write Domina as that one note of like angry.
Yeah, it's like, the even going back to West Side Story, what I love the fact is, like, when you look at it, the normal love song for someone who's just met Maria, right, would be like, she's beautiful, but that's not what that song's about. It's like, I only know her name, so I can only sing about her name.
Right,
And I think in this, he's giving character to this kind of one-dimensional, or could be a much more one-dimensional, because I think the go-to for a songwriter would be like, she's angry, she's mad, she's looking for her husband, and I'll just write that. Mm-hmm. But then to open it up by saying, for over 30 years, I've cried myself to sleep, I think that does take a little bit of talent to be like, let's give a little bit more to this character than just that one thing.
Right, yeah. And, you know, I don't know where she lands after. Like, can you just tell me a little bit, like, what happens to Donna after the song?
Not a whole lot. Like, she's, she basically dresses up as a maiden and then tries to get Senex to commit adultery. But because he's going after Philia, she thinks that he's, like, being faithful to her.
Right.
That's basically what is happening after this.
So I guess she does land in, like, I still really do love. I still want to be with this man.
Which is too bad, because I think the last line that Senex says in the finale is like, it's a tragedy tonight, because that's what his last lyric is, because he's back with his wife. I want to give a little shout out here to Sondheim himself, because him classically has to put himself down in his own book here.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So he says, like Impossible, this song has the advantage of being a character song, but it's not inventive enough. Once the comic notion of rapidly alternating passions has been presented, I seem to have found nothing to do with it but repeat it. This accounts for the lame use of alliteration at the end. And then jumping forward, in many songs, including more than a few of my own, alliteration is used because the lyric has too little to say and the language has to be gussied up in an attempt to keep the listener interested. That Dirty Old Man is not a total loss, but what laughs it gets come from the physical comedy of Domina's manhandling of Asterion, whom she alternatively embraces and shakes as a stand-in for her husband. So he doesn't think he gives enough lyrically to the actress in this thing.
Right.
But I mean, it is one note, but it's not a hugely long song.
No,
either.
Yeah. And I mean, he is very self-deprecating.
Yes.
And I can sort of agree, but I think where you can find more depth is in the music that he wrote as well, and mm-hmm. those changes musically.
Yeah.
You can really, I mean, it is what it is. It's the song, you know, there's not, and we can look into it, but there's not that much into it, right, you know what I mean? Right. But at the same time, there's still a lot there to really grab, and yeah. You know.
This is another one of the examples, like when I started this season, I was in some ways not looking forward to talking about this song. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know how much I'm going to have to say about right. it. But what I've discovered over the last couple of weeks of actually getting into it and looking at it, that Sondheim is great like this, where there is stuff that's hidden in there sometimes. It's like, oh, there is a lot more to this song than mm-hmm. what it seems on face value even.
Yeah. Oh, this is what I was going to say. Like mm-hmm. you could, you know, like basically this is a character choosing to be with somebody who doesn't treat her well.
Yeah.
You know, like abuses her, doesn't treat her right, cheats on her all the time, and doesn't think highly of her at all.
No.
This character chooses to be with this person, which is like, you know, a strong modern woman would be like, No, I don't think so. Like, that's never going to happen. I'm not going to do that. But the reality is kind of, in many ways, that's what happens with a lot of people. That is what the choice that a lot of people make. So it's, to me, that's real, you know? That rings more true than the other. Yes, mm-hmm. you could see it that way. And, you know, part of me does see it that way. But there's a certain truth to, you know, choosing to stay and make it work versus like, I want to leave because you treat me horribly. And you know what I mean? So there's that. That's what's interesting. You can ride that line back and forth. So, yeah, I mean, that I just wanted to share that because I was kind of grappling with that because my first initial reaction was just like, oh, she's just this like, you know, yes, she's painted as this stronger kind of domineering woman. But yes, she is quite so like in the song, very vulnerable. And she really lands on like, I'm going to stay and keep getting abused.
Which is tragic in and of itself.
It is so tragic. But
I feel like this, if this was a modern piece, like meaning not set in ancient Rome.
Right.
There's a conversation I've had with a friend of mine about, I want to be very careful about how I phrase this, because I'm not talking about if people are being like abused or emotionally manipulated, but I find that a lot of times people and relationships without really trying to work on them, mm-hmm. meaning like anyone who I know personally who has been married or in long-term relationships is like, you know what? There's been some years, months that are like tough, like you mm-hmm. but we got through it because we both knew like we want this relationship to continue.
Yeah, exactly.
Instead of being like, you know, things are hard, let's just end this now and like
I just listened to another podcast that was kind of touched on this subject. I'm not gonna get super into it, but just the main thing was that we're, you know, there's this romantic fantasy in our, you know, relationships that like find the one, and this one is this like they gotta be this and this, and there's a list, and like they set it in a way where, you know, they have to be your soulmate, they have to be your best friend, have to be your, you know, biggest fan, support, and then listing out all your needs of your from your partner that is expected and kind of what's ingrained in society actually sounds really ridiculous. Because back kind of in the day, you know, your partner served as one thing, but you also had best friends. Also had like, because we lived in more a community where like now we're so, I think our society is just more alone. Like,
I agree.
You know what I mean? Like you know, we're self-sufficient. We can, you know, like families, it's common for like me, I moved, my parents live in Vancouver. I moved to Alberta by myself, like with my partner. And like, then I'm on my own, but like, that's not normal. Back in the day where like your family unit is your, yeah, you know, that's
extended
your,
and all, yeah, and all that kind of stuff.
They're always around you and your, you know, your actual community. So there's all these people serve different things.
Yeah.
Whereas I mean, like now we're kind of like, no, this one person is going to serve all of these things. Like, no, like that's actually a lot to ask of one person.
Yeah, and I don't think it's fair to either person in that relationship.
Exactly.
Like
you're
forcing this person to be, literally be everything to you.
Yeah.
And them to be all the Which stuff is to super, you. It's
and like, then that's when it tough. Doesn't work. And then you're like, okay, well, you're not this person. So I'm going to, you know, and not work at it. So it's just, yeah, it's interesting. Anyways, getting into that.
I mean, I guess this is a good segue into this because I think that the broader question here is like, I've asked this to a few different people, but the representation of women in this show is interesting because on the one hand, as we've discovered, like at the very least, the creators of this show and Sondheim as being one of them gives more voice to the women characters than the stuff that this is being based on. The Plautus plays, like, the women didn't speak.
Right.
Or at least Ophelia character didn't speak in them.
Right.
And here at least she actually says things and actually has a song by herself. But at the same time, I wouldn't say it's like a great representation of women at the same time. So I guess, how do you feel about that?
Well, here's the thing, Kyle.
Yeah.
There's the luck. You know, there's just a lack of representation of women in this industry, whatever medium, theater, film, and any other, you know, whatever else is out there. And historically, that's just how it's been. And there has been a shift lately, you know, like in the last 5 to 10 years, there's been a shift. And it's really great to see, but I feel like we're at the beginning of that shift. And it's funny because you did, not to call you out on it, but, you know, going from nothing, and you called it out, like, you know, going from nothing and then like some.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, you know, like that's really not like a
bare minimum is like, okay. Right?
I mean, love Sondheim.
Yeah, yeah.
Great guy. but yes, he's writing for, that's just the era that he wrote all of this in. And that's what was available. And that was, you know, what women were in the industry, right? So, but you know, I'm always going to be on the side of it's not enough.
Yeah, I mean, right. To be like super critical, I have to go the critical route. I mean, he is coming from, yes, he didn't write the music, but he definitely wrote the lyrics to Gypsy, which I would argue has a bunch of great female characters.
Right, yeah, yeah. So, and then Gypsy was first, and then this. So, you know, and I do give, like, he is kind of a, yeah, he writes for good women characters and a lot of, you know, we represented in a way. But, you know, I guess I'm always just, because we've always been that secondary kind of, you know, secondary character in most of this medium, then it just, yeah, I just feel like there's always going to be, you know, more. I wish there was always more to do. I mean, even as a girl in theater school, there's always like that quota of like 5 girls to 1 guy. Mm-hmm. So like the guys always got the best roles and all the girls had to share like the ensemble.
Right.
So like, and that was true. And I mean, I went to a few different theater schools and theater kind of training stuff. And it was always like that. So, you know, there's just never enough good female roles to go around. And a lot of it is we had to switch the roles into female, like the male roles to female, just because there, you know, we needed to do stuff too. Like, you know, there's just, yeah, not enough to go around usually.
Yeah. So I'm hopeful for change. I mean, that's why I don't have a problem with this testing out of flipping gender roles. I don't know how familiar you are with the show Company.
Yep.
But like they just did the female.
Yeah, I saw that. Company, I loved it. I was like, I mean, I've been listening to the recording and I was like, yeah, that makes so much sense for now. Like this day and age. Yeah. Like, I mean, we really want to see another Bachelor, you know, like, you know, and this kind of flipping that on its side, seeing, you know, a woman in New York City kind of go through these, like, yeah, you should get married. Like, why aren't you married yet? Like, and that is like a real question and a real reality to a lot of people that you're like, I'm okay. Like, I don't have to.
I don't have to if I don't want to.
Yeah. Right? And it's just, it's because I think that is the perfect time to do that. Like, it resonates more, you know? And I love that you can breathe new life into these older, not older, I mean, you know, I mean, it's been a, you know, a few years since it was first written. And that's what's so great about this medium. You can just keep going. And then, you know, there's a year of revivals on Broadway. And like, is there any new thing now? Like, you know, but it's just cool to see everything kind of, and not recycle sounds bad, but in a breathe it. Yeah. Breathe
new life. I like the idea of that mentality of like breathing new life into something that's already been produced. I mean, even just using the company example, right? Mm-hmm. There was like the original one, then there was like the revival that happened in the early 90s with Raul Esparza.
Yeah, that was that's the recording I'm used to, I guess, like the ones I really got into.
Yeah, and then there was like another one that they did. It was like a concert version that had like Neil Patrick Harris and other people in it. Oh, I haven't heard that. Anyways, what I'm trying to say is there's been like 3 or 4 revivals of like the traditional way, and it's cool to see a different version. And even in a funny thing, to go back to that, I mean, in the 1996 revival, the person who replaced Nathan Lane was Whoopi Goldberg.
Right. Yeah. I saw a bit of that on YouTube, which is really like, that makes total sense. Why not?
Like this, I mean, I think sometimes people get too focused on like whether or not this is like historically accurate and stuff like that, which is like, fair enough, I guess. But it being theater, I think you're able to
there's way more actors. Leeway and flexibility in that sense. It's funny because there's this struggle now of like, you know, we need more representation of different people on screen, in theater, and you know, that casting is really turning on its side, you know, like the cast of Les Mis, where it's like multicultural. Mm-hmm. And I think growing up, I never saw that. So that was what's really cool. And some shows did show that, like Rent and stuff like that.
Right.
But it was written that way. Right. Well, you can argue that, I guess. But you know, things like shows like Forum or Les Misérables set in like French Revolution, like you don't see
right.
like a multicultural set of people in that history, right? So it's just one race, like one country doing that.
Right.
So you're used to seeing, you know, white people, I guess. Let's just be clear. But it's interesting that there has been a change and it's just moving forward that way. And people are like, oh no, like, and there's still some people like, you know, the Harry Potter and the Cursed Child where Hermione is now suddenly a black girl.
But
like there was never in the books stated that she was white.
Right.
There was a whole uproar. And you're like, no, Hermione is white. And it's like, there's that whole war thing about that. And you know, it's easy to forgo that, but you can't go, like, there's the argument of you can do it multiculturally, but you can't like do it the other way.
Yeah, I mean,
and I think that fine line, and I don't want to get into it. But
there's we're a whole, whole can of worms that we could open up that way. I personally will just state, as the white man of this podcast,
yes,
that what I say is
not
right.
White, by the way,
what I'm trying to say is that I appreciate seeing different voices and different backgrounds being brought in, which is part of the reason why I'm so happy that this Steven Spielberg version of West Side Story that's being created right now is casting like Hispanic actors in the role of the sharks instead
of
being white people usually all the time.
Yeah, but what's funny is like it makes sense to cast Hispanic people in that role.
It does, yes.
Right? And that's like the more like let's be strict about that.
Right, I guess. It'd be more the flip around.
So like I'm still figuring it out. Like I'm confused too. Like what am I, like what is moving forward? And what is restrictive? Because you don't want to restrict creatives. Like that's kind of, you know, you don't want to be like, this is a box that it has to be this way. You can go outside this box, but what's become, you know, that line of like, that's not good. And like, you know, and what's, you know, that's actually like a really cool way to look at that. So, I think it's a debate and it's an experiment. We'll
figure it out.
Yeah.
I think it's cool to experiment. And if a piece actually calls for a quote unquote a minority or someone who's non-white, I guess.
They should be given that chance to do that, of course.
It's like,
I totally.
I'm not actually that knowledgeable about the show, to be perfectly honest, which is Pacific Overtures.
Yes.
Which I love the music from it.
We did that in school. Like, I wasn't in that one, but that was one of our second year final shows that we did. So I got to see it. And I was like the only Asian person in the class, and I was not in that one, which is really funny. Right. I love that show. That's actually, I forgot to mention, that's like one of my favorite Sondheim.
I've been hearing through the grapevine that this is like low-key some people's like favorite Sondheim show is Pacific Overtures.
That's so good.
But from what I understand, I'm totally can be proven wrong, but the original Broadway cast had white actors portraying some of those roles. It wasn't until the revival where they actually
cast. They did
cast.
All an Asian cast. Yeah, right. That's really cool. I mean, I wouldn't put it past that first reiteration of it. The both versions are great vocally. I mean, that's I've listened to. But what's funny is, I graduated in 2010.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
So that's, what is the year?
9 years ago.
9 years ago. Even, it doesn't seem like that long ago, but it wasn't questionable to put a bunch of, you know, young white actors in that show and like have them like have eyeliner and like maybe paint, like dye their hair black.
There's no way that would fly today.
Right?
No,
like, it's wild. Like, yeah. We looked at me and my one of my good friends from that class, one of my best friends still, we looked at pictures of that production that was taken. And this was like kind of early years of Facebook. So it wasn't that published online yet, and you're like, wow, that's so not okay, that's bad. We're just laughing. I mean, but you know, you don't have to do a show, and that was the show that was picked for us, and they thought it was a good idea. And you know, it wasn't bad, but it was like, it made me love that show and got to see it on stage, because there was a lot of taiko drumming and really interesting, like Somewhere in a Tree.
Yeah, Somewhere in a Tree. I like that song a lot.
God.
Actually, it's
spoil
the lead, but that's sometimes one of his favorite songs.
Yes, he does love that one. That's one of his favorites. I remember hearing that when we were doing that show and really researching it. I'm excited for that one. Sure. What year did that come out? Do you know off the top of your head?
I can do some quick math. It's 70 something. I'm gonna say 75 ish.
So there's a. We gotta wait. We gotta wait for that one to come out.
I'm gonna guess 3 years from now.
Yeah, wow.
2.5,
yeah,
maybe.
Right.
Zena, thank you so much for joining me here today.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. I probably should have let you know this before asking it to you, but is there any way people could follow you online if they wanted to?
I'm not a big social media person, but I do have Instagram.
Okay.
At Zena J. Lee. I don't post a lot, but I do from time to time post things that I am on. Mm-hmm. So if you do want to see me on a show or something
any,
like that.
Any upcoming shows you're actually going to be a part of?
Yeah, there's a TELUS original that I was a part of in the fall, and they're premiering this spring. The show called Paper Champions. So it's about wrestling, which I know you love.
No, it's weirdly that I love it too. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's about wrestling, and it's a comedy, and it's just the life of these wrestlers in like a downtrodden kind of league. Super cool female character. I'm kind of the spoiler alert, I guess, just the antagonist, I guess.
Okay.
And you see me towards the end of that bit, and hopefully they have a season two.
Yeah. Fingers crossed.
And maybe I'll get to be in it again. So yeah.
Cool. Thank you so much.
Bye.
Pretty good, right? Well, thank you to the Alberta Podcast Network and ATB this week. Next time, we're going to be talking about That'll Show Him, which, weirdly enough, the person who was supposed to speak to me backed out, so I'm trying to find a guest for that show right this minute, so hopefully it actually comes out next week. If you have additional feedback, comments, questions, or a great guest idea, please send those to puttingittogetherpodcast@gmail.com. Also, a big thanks to the always great Chris Taniguchi, who designed the podcast artwork, and to Nick Driscoll for composing our theme music. For now, we've reached the end of our episode. Yes, I know. Goodbye for now.
Is there any, like, no-nos I shouldn't do?
I don't know. Don't be racist.
Cool. Done.
Okay.
I mean, I'll try really hard.
That's really the only rule that I have.